Station 2. What to do with it all. Back in the park, that roar of the water cascading below the ground sounds like a rush of mechanized white noise, insistent and cacophonous as it disappears from the light. The sound echoes back up the gaping mouth of the tunnel and rattles its way through the steel grating that snags a small floating garbage patch. The constancy is blaring no matter the season. Stand close by and it cancels out your conversations. But down Mill Street and along Mike Wagner Green, where the water slants into the sunlight, you can walk the Iron Horse Trail and barely hear a drip. The straightened water course is, I have to admit, impressive in its perfect gradient, the slickly engineered design of its concrete encasement. A creek become an immovable channel. This rigid container has already collected water from Detweiler and the Henry Sturm Creeks all the way from the city's far west side. The waters have also flowed down from Cherry Park, rippling into the man-made lake at the far side of Willow River and Victoria Park. The main creek and its dozen tributaries form what Western scientists call a sub-watershed within the much vaster Grand River watershed. All the water here bound for the great coagulated tumble over Niagara Falls. The creek settlement history, as most commonly relayed in the public record, goes like this. In the early 1800s, Pennsylvania German Mennonites, like my own ancestors, Joseph Schneider and Barbara Eby, arrived deep into Block 2 of the Haldimand Tract. Alongside the stream that came to bear the Schneider family name, Joseph and Barbara built their house, barn, and water-powered sawmill. They dammed the creek for a mill pond, creating the lake and the park. But contrary to the oft-told origin story of the village of Berlin, the land around this creek shed was not uninhabited wilderness. That's a pioneer myth that distorts the truth. In fact, the sand hills and creek-cut valleys, the boglands and open forests, had long been tended by the Chinatown, the Anishinaabe, and the Haudenosaunee. They groomed trails all over this gravel moraine. They managed fish and game and forest habitats throughout the watershed, regularly burned grassland and underbrush in key locations. They also farmed vast expanses of land around many longhouse villages. There's one buried at the Strange Street site, one in Huron Natural Area, another briefly salvaged from under Fisher-Hallman Boulevard near Strasburg Creek, to name but a few examples. At that Strange Street site around Cherry Park, the Chinatown had a long-standing village of longhouses and earthworks and lived in direct relationship to the creek. Land-based teacher Terre Chartrand describes the community as tree shepherds, people who cared for and harvested from cherry and nut trees on that higher ground, people who then traded the tree harvests with their kin who fished the mouth of the creek. Later, the Anishinaabe would overwinter at the confluence of creeks and wetlands that became Victoria Park, traveling here by a section of the complex trail network that followed the Coldwater Stream up from the Grand River. Indeed, this upper Grand watershed was shared hunting ground, per the terms of the Dish with One Spoon Agreement. For 10,000 years and counting, Indigenous people have loved the creek and bog waters here on the west side of the Grand. And these waters explain the colonists' arrival here too. Joseph Schneider's mill needed the creek water. The Lang Tannery and Bright Hop Leather Companies needed the tannins and the peat bogs. The problem for Berlin, as the city was called until 1916, wasn't the water. The problem was the waste issuing from the increasingly thickly settled town site and its bevy of industry. The problem was what to do with it all. William Story's 1935 paper on the design of Kitchener's first sewage treatment plant notes how this inland city is 3 miles from the Grand River and is situated on a small stream called Schneider's Creek, which has a flow of 3 million gallons a day. This creek is the only water available for dilution of sewage and sewage plant effluents. Look closely at the city's 200 years and counting of European settlement. In each decade, you'll find a city and its people grappling with the water. Water and our waste. We might now be confused with the mystery of where this water moves, might bemoan the long pollution of the creek, might despair at the distinct lack of life along its concrete bed. But there's a lot of love for this creek too. I'm finding this out as I continue to walk the creek's fenced off edges and talk to passersby and artists, water experts, and urban planners. In fact, finding, mapping, and advocating for buried and neglected urban rivers is now something of a passion project for many people worldwide. It turns out that many of us want our urban creeks and rivers to mean and be more than just stormwater drains. When the nature writer Robert McFarlane finds that people have trouble speaking of a river as alive, he asks them to imagine a river as dead. We know what death looks like, so why do we find it so hard to see life? Given a chance, he writes, river life pours back.